Take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. Starts with a couple of headlines. Starting to see some of the economic impact of no sports. The sudden disappearance of sports will erase at least $12 billion, with a B, in relevant revenue and hundreds of thousands of jobs. That's according to an economic analysis conducted for ESPN. The economic catastrophe will more than double if the college football and NFL schedules are wiped out this fall by the coronavirus pandemic. Anytime you sit there and wonder why everybody so desperately wants sports back, part of it, we want the normalcy. Part of it is also, in fairness, the fact that the financial repercussions for not getting sports back are absolutely crippling. A little bit of NFL news. The Titans have declined the fifth-year option for Corey Davis, the wide receiver that was the fifth overall pick in 2017. He has 142 receptions for 1,867 yards, six touchdowns. That's all very good. Unfortunately, it's not good enough for him to get that fifth-year option picked up. Let's acknowledge, though, that the fifth-year option would have carried a $15.68 million salary for Corey Davis. So while this says that they're not going to pay him at this level, I'm not sure it actually says that Corey Davis is done in the NFL or even, frankly, done with the Titans. It just says that they're done with him at that pay range. At First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. We've got a little bit of fun coming this weekend in the form of The Last Dance. So as a result, we're asking you, who's the most like MJ in all of sports right now? The most MJ-like across the board. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Jeff in Connecticut. Jeff, what do you got? Who do you think's the most MJ-like in all of sports?
Thanks for taking my call. It's Steph Curry. I grew up watching Michael Jordan. I appreciated everything Kobe did to model his game similar to Jordan and the success he had. And the only person since who has had the killer instinct has been Steph Curry. And he's proven that in college, throughout his whole NBA career, just making the best out of every play he could, you know, making his game better and better every day. Thanks for taking my call.
You know what, Jeff? You know what I like about that a lot? I said earlier that when you talk about Jordan, you're talking about somebody that obviously did it with grace, made it look easy. Check. Steph does that. You're talking about somebody with tremendous tremendous competitive fire that makes himself better every day. Check. Steph does that. You're talking about somebody that makes the worst of his teammates better. I believe Steph does that. And then most importantly, somebody that makes the best of his teammates willing to accept a different role than they might have elsewhere. Well, Steph certainly did that through the duration. This is actually a really good call on it. Now, he may not have that same swagger in some ways, that same, there's a certain thing about Michael Jordan that Steph seems so nice. I don't know that we put it with him in that, but he's got the marketability. He's got all of that. So you're swaying my mindset there. I like that a lot. Ron in Miami, who do you have as the most MJ-like in all of sports right now?
I think if the NBA can do it, it's clear that it can happen in boxing. It's clear that it could happen in UFC. I think it should be able to happen. Although golf and tennis, I'm not talking about the struggles in terms of travel, because obviously you got to take that into consideration. Every country has its own issues to deal with, and we understand that. But if individuals can get to the locales where tournaments are going to take place or competition is going to take place, I think sports like that, where you can literally exercise social distancing while performing, meaning golf and tennis, I think you can pull that off. Boxing and UFC, it's simply because of the minimal amount of bodies that it involves. I think you can get the required tests necessary for all the participants and combatants involved, and you can do that. And I don't want to hear anything about NASCAR. I mean, please. I mean, you're getting in the car. I mean, I'm not trying to say that you're not around anybody, but if there's a sport that exists that involves social distancing, how much more distancing can you get than being in your car and driving around the track? Ain't nobody in the car with you. So I definitely think that that's something that could happen as well. So, again, listen to what we're talking about here. Basketball, obviously a team sport, involves a multitude of bodies. Lots of testing obviously need to take place, and I think that they can handle that. They're going to do what they do. But golf, tennis, UFC, boxing, and NASCAR, all I think are very, very plausible to have without fans in attendance. Television rate, the television networks can air these things, and people can watch it on their TVs at home, where most people should be anyway because of the times that we're living in.
I agree about that. Although NASCAR, you have pit crews and you have, you know, there are bodies.
Involved. But you know what I'm saying. I'm just talking about boxing. Yeah.
I agree. We're on the same page about that. I originally came out and said very early on, even before everyone kind of went into self-quarantine and stuff, that boxing and the UFC could potentially do this. They haven't done it so far, though Dana White would like to. I think part of that is because there aren't tests widely available enough, which is why I'm still skeptical about the NBA even testing, not testing asymptomatic players. You need 15,000 tests to do this. And that means that there are lots of people who need tests. You read articles of medical professionals, nurses and stuff, dying of coronavirus because they keep going back to the hospital in which they work, Stephen A., and they can't get a test because they don't want to spare them. So how do you get 15,000 of them?
I'm only interjecting because I want to throw something at you. I want to give you the last word. I want your response to this. Max, when Rudy Gobert tested positive, you do remember that Oklahoma City and the Utah Jazz were basically held in isolation. They were quarantined from various reports. They were held until they were tested. The issue was political to some degree because while they were being tested, there were people who were complaining about multimillionaire athletes, stars, sports leagues, etc., having access to tests that the average Joe didn't have access to. My prediction, Max, is that come June, that's going to be less of an argument because we realize what an assist it would give towards the economy. As a result, people won't be complaining as much about these players, these teams, these leagues having tests available that they pay for, and as a result, they can move forward. What do you think about that?
I agree that there's even an ethical argument that you can make that it's good for everyone if we have these games. And I frequently reference Major League Baseball and what FDR said during the Second World War. Hey, FDR, kids, was the president at the time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Because you have to identify this stuff nowadays.
Yes.
He said this is in the national interest. The difference is in this case, that, like, this disease, Stephen A., which originally, it attaches to the lungs. That's the issue. We need respirators. They're finding out it attacks the kidney, the heart, and the brain. That 30- and 40-year-old people are dying of strokes. There's conjecture that it could lead to male infertility. So when you have that stuff out there now, which is, I know, because it's like, whoa, that's scarier than we originally thought. This ain't the flu, ladies and gentlemen, right? And so how do the NBA players feel about that? You know, we're in a rush to get back, but all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is serious. We're going to need these tests. And given that, as I mentioned, stories of people who are not being treated because they can't get the test because hospitals can't spare them, it's still a tough spot for the NBA to say we have now hoarded 15,000 tests. Boxing or the UFC, we have a couple dozen tests. I think you could have a fight card. NBA, those optics are different still.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You guys are chiming in. Who's the most like MJ in all of sports right now? Let's get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. But we'll get it from Greg in Chicago. Greg, who do you have as the most like MJ in all of sports right now?
Well, if we're going to go with right now, I just saw where Alex Smith has had 17 surgeries on his leg in a year and a half. I mean, that's just 17 in a year. That's crazy. And I just think that that shows Jordan-esque drive and determination right there.
You know what? That's actually a great call. And look, if you guys haven't heard about it or seen the documentary coming tonight, we're getting a look at the process. There's the special E60 tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN about Alex Smith. And I got to give Stefania Bell, our ESPN NFL injury expert, a ton of credit that she's been able to follow him through a process that has absolutely been stunning. For anyone that's not familiar with the story, it was a leg break in the game. And unfortunately for Alex Smith, it was such a complicated leg break. Stefania Bell said it was more similar to essentially a war wound than an actual leg break. And not only was the leg catastrophic, he almost had the leg amputated. And at one point, they were concerned that he was going to die from the infections afterwards. So 17 surgeries just to get himself
back to the point that he's at now. So the crazy part about all of that is that Alex Smith is not only, at one point they weren't sure he'd be able to walk, he would keep the leg, they weren't sure he'd be able to play with his kids, and now he's actually considering trying to come back to the NFL. It's really crazy stuff. Alex Smith was on Lebatard earlier today talking with them about a little bit of this process and where he is right now. This is Alex Smith earlier today on the Lebatard Show.
What is it about this damn sport where you go through 17 surgeries, you're fighting for your life, you decide to keep your leg and not have it amputated, you've been through hell and back, and yet you still want to play while having all the money in the world, you have fame, you have your health, you have your family, yet you still want to play in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a progression. Like I said earlier, I mean, there were times where all I was thinking about was walking again. You know, people would ask me back then, like, are you thinking about football? And for me, it was almost dismissive of it. Like, why would I even, that's the furthest thing from my mind. But I'm also intentionally, why would I make that decision at that point? I really think it'd be unfair. Of course, I couldn't imagine it early on, but I also wasn't going to put myself through that. I mean, I had every singular focus in trying to be able to walk again, you know, and there were so many steps, and I'm still on that stepping stones, so to speak, with that path laid out. And there were so many steps I had to get to before I could even fathom that. And so for me, it was really just kind of thinking about the next step. So to still consider yourself young at the time, and I have so much life ahead of me, there were so many things I had to get to before I could ever think about playing football and playing quarterback again. Quarterback, I think, being able to do that is certainly the pinnacle, one of the hardest positions in sport. And I was going to do everything I could to keep going down that path, and for me, selfishly, knowing that if I can play football, if I can play quarterback again in the NFL, that I don't have many limitations in life, and then also to be confronted with this kind of challenge. I've got three little kids, two young boys. There is no way I'm going to back down, you know, with this kind of presented in front of me, this challenge, and those guys watching everything I do in the face of adversity, and how am I going to handle that? And so, just too big a challenge in life for me to turn my back on. And the crazy thing is, obviously, is I keep taking steps along the way to recovery and to finding out where my potential is now. You know, obviously, I'm feeling great for the things I have accomplished, but at the same time, you get fueled even more for how far you can take it.
Now, that's some straight talk. Straight talk wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart, coming from Alex Smith. That's Alex Smith earlier today on the Lebatard Show. As again, tonight we get Project 11. It's the E60 special on Alex Smith and his recovery from a broken leg. Not just a broken leg, much worse than that. Again, I'll go back to Stefania Bell, who has just done an incredible job getting this to where it is right now as a special and really informing everybody. She was on Golic and Wingo with us yesterday and talked about Alex Smith and not just the leg, but how much danger there was for him overall in his life after the injury.
His life was in the balance. And, you know, when an infection like that is progressing and it was in his leg, the concern is that it moves its way up and moves to your vital organs, you know, and there was a real question about what would be ultimately necessary in order to save his life. And there was discussion about would they need to take his leg in order to essentially cut the infection off from getting to the rest of him. And that's what plays out in this, and you're able to see the details of it in the piece. But it really, I just can't imagine what everybody was going through, because that was the constant question, and they had to monitor the path of this infection so closely, because, of course, the priority is life and then leg. But you don't ignore the fact that you're dealing with someone who this is their career as an athlete. So you want to try and preserve it if you can. And the doctors were constantly evaluating this.
It's going to be really incredible. And, you know, this is one of the times where you can look at it and really learn something for the first time, because so much of what we have seen in the past, you can look at other injuries and say, okay, I understand the scope and the perspective. I understand what the healing time is going to be. I know what my body's going to be doing. This was all so incredible. And that's why, frankly, it was Alex Smith that reached out to Stefania and said, hey, I want to chronicle this so that if anybody else ever goes through it again, they know sort of what to do and how to get through this. It really powerful moment, and it's powerful, and it shows the love for the game that Alex Smith is even considering coming back, is even thinking about some way that he could possibly get back on a football field. I can't imagine for his family that it's an easy thing for him to be even contemplating, but it shows what the game means to so many people. And we talk about it often. We talk about the game in our level of fandom and our level of passion. And I talk often about how the game is a business, but for some guys, it's more than that. For some guys, it's everything. And as you look at Alex Smith trying to figure out what his life is going to look like moving forward, he's so lucky to have been able to progress so much farther than anyone would have imagined that now he's allowing himself to dream. It's really cool, and I can't stress enough, tonight, E60, it's called Project 11, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. You'll want to check it out. We've been asking you for your take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on some of the conversation about who's the most like MJ in all of sports. Right now, that's the way you guys can get in on all of this. In the meantime, also don't forget the All In Challenge. It's a fundraising initiative that offers incredible sports experiences to bid on, enter to win, and it all supports organizations providing food to those in need, particularly kids, the elderly, and frontline workers. This is really cool. Don't forget to check out the Enter to Win opportunities that close tonight. There's a few of them that close tonight. Enter to Win is like a raffle. So if you go out to the webpage and you see a bunch of stuff you can't afford, that's okay. There's a bunch of raffle stuff out there that you can get just like a raffle ticket, 10 for 10, and you can put yourself in and get yourself the opportunity to win. Some of those, like ending tonight, a chance to throw out a first pitch at the next World Series, the chance to sign a one-day contract with the Dallas Mavericks for a preseason game. You can even design and call a play at an Eagles preseason game. So all very cool moments. I was just walking with my Madden playbook. You can enter to win these experiences, and 100% of the money raised will benefit organizations providing food to those in need. So if you want to participate, you want to help out, you want to contribute if you can, or you just want to learn more about how these organizations help, all you got to do is visit allinchallenge.com. Get out there to allinchallenge.com. We're taking some of your take. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. Dennis in Virginia Beach. Dennis, who's the closest, who's the most like MJ in sports right now?
Well, thank you so much for getting my call. I appreciate it. Yeah, for me, I'll be brutally honest about it, sir. The closest one is no one for Michael Jordan. Currently playing, no one. But I would say the closest I've seen was Kobe Bryant, no doubt. That was the closest one. And probably an honorable mention will be Michael Phelps when he broke the unbreakable record of Mark Spitz, those consecutive wins in the swimming competition.
I like your take on Kobe. Phelps is harder for me because it's an individual sport, so we don't ask as much of individual athletes, although the dominance is there. I question, and you guys know my level of Kobe fandom. Heck, if anybody watched when this show went on the air the day after Kobe's passing, I couldn't make it through. It took me a very long time. I'm still not ready for this weekend, as I've seen some of the highlights, and many of you have also. Kobe makes an appearance in this weekend's Last Dance. That's obvious from some of the previews, and I'm not sure I'm ready to watch it. My level of Kobe fandom aside, though, there's one thing that Michael Jordan managed to do that Kobe and Shaq and none of them were able to do during those dynastic Lakers teams. Kobe kept everybody together. Kobe found a way to keep Scottie Pippen engaged and happy. He found a way to relate to Dennis Rodman. He found a way to keep the Bulls together. That's not necessarily the easiest thing to do in leadership, and that's not something that Kobe and Shaq were able to do when they were together. It's interesting that as we got later in life, and then obviously with the tragic passing, we forget a little bit of how bad that relationship got at the end. And for all of the issues that Scottie, Michael, Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, Tony Kukoc, for any of the issues any of those guys had, they managed to keep it together because winning meant that much to them. That's got to be some part of how we judge some level of what we see from Michael Jordan and what made him great. TJ in Kentucky, give me your take. Who's the most like Michael Jordan in all of sports right now?
My pick can't come from the NBA. I actually have to look at an individual sport. I'm going with Novak Djokovic. And I actually see some ties with their respective careers, not just in the dominance and the titles and the mentality. But Michael early on had problems with the Bad Boys Piston teams and getting over that hump. Had to change his body, get physical so he can take those hits. Novak early on had all the ability in the world but had no endurance, had to completely change his diet and the way he approached the game, and now he's the most dominant person on tour, and he had to go overcome guys like Roger Federer and Nadal and Andy Murray at the time. He's the closest I can think of in sports.
You know, that's actually a great, you know, I said earlier, I struggle a little bit with the individual, but when you mentioned the mountain that he had to climb and sort of the walls he had to break through and the way he had to develop his game and his body, that's a really good call. I want more of your take. 888-SAY-ESPN. You guys tell me who's the most like MJ in all of sports right now. We're going to take more of your take. Plus, we get episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance this Sunday on ESPN. We've got a really cool preview you do not want to miss. Some interesting shade talking that I would not have expected. You'll hear that next. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you who's the most like MJ in all of sports right now. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Getting a bunch of different ideas on this one. We'll take more of your take in a second. That obviously comes because we want you to tune in to The Last Dance. It's behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Before we get to our guest here, he's going to help us break down a little bit of what to expect and some thoughts on what we've seen so far. We have to give you a little preview, and it comes in the form of some interesting, like, of all the players for Michael Jordan to be fired up about, I never would have imagined he'd be fired up about this one. Check out this preview from The Last Dance coming this weekend.
Clyde the Glide says we're the two best in the game, but I'm not getting into a war of words with Mike.
Clyde wasn't a threat. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't a threat. But me being compared to him, I took offense to that.
I'm working for NBC. I'm covering the finals. So the night before game one, we were at Michael's house playing cards, and he said, you know what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm going to give it to this dude.
Up at the start, Michael Jordan facing Clyde Drexler. Jordan, the three-point land.
So he hit that first three. And then here come the second one. The third one.
Michael Jordan gets the win. That's his fourth three-point field goal. Michael Jordan with 4 three-pointers and a half has tied the NBA Finals record.
Michael didn't want anybody to have nothing over him.
I love all of that. By the way, you're going to get even more of it this weekend with The Last Dance. But really, the most under-talked about portion of that is Magic Johnson just flippantly says while playing cards at Michael Jordan's house. I wonder how much money was in the pot on that one. I'm just saying. All right, so let's get a little bit of insight into The Last Dance. For that, we're joined by our very own Jeff Dickerson. He'll be hosting Game Day on ESPN Radio tomorrow, 1 to 6 p.m. Eastern. JD, you know Chicago. You know this team. You know this area. You know this era so stinking well. What surprised you so far out of The Last Dance?
Oh, my gosh. I think the one thing that surprised me, Jason, is that it's just been universally praised. You know, we live in a world where everyone looks for something negative. I mean, it's never, nothing is ever perfect in people's minds. And I can tell you that, yes, I'm from Chicago, and you and I both work for ESPN, so it's in our interest, my interest, to like The Last Dance and talk glowingly about it. But I can tell you that as we all sit home and all I do is text my friends when I'm not, you know, chasing my son around and walking the dog and everything and doing work, all we do is text and talk and Zoom. And I'm telling you, every single person talks about The Last Dance and how much they love it and how much it reflects what truly happened during that era and things being from Chicago that you can remember. I wasn't surprised by any one particular aspect because I had heard all the stories about MJ, about Scotty, about Krause, about Phil Jackson, you know, about all these things that have gone down. Rodman, which there's a million stories there that haven't even scratched the surface yet with. But the fact that it's just been so universally praised by everyone makes me feel good because that was just such a big part of my life growing up.
I've watched it. We're talking to Jeff Dickerson, ESPN's Jeff Dickerson, on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, Jason Fitz. I've watched with this mindset of social media, Jeff, because imagine the reaction, you know, if a front office decided they were going to rip the Warriors apart, but the players wanted to stay together. Imagine if, you know, Scottie Pippen's not happy with his money, how social media reacts to that, or if Rodman decides he needs a week off for Vegas. And I think this weekend we're going to get a real peek behind the curtain on, you know, Horace Grant and whatever issues he may have had as the forgotten member of this trio and this quartet at this point. So you start to look forward at some of this. I wonder how social media would have affected this team, because I have a hard time believing, as ripped apart as they were behind the scenes, that they could have survived the level of scrutiny NBA players are given now.
Well, what I was told was from people that I know that covered those Bulls teams in the 90s and the last three championships, when the Bulls were on the road and they were at the team hotel, it was like the Beatles times five. I mean, I wasn't alive when the Beatles were playing together. I could only imagine what that scene was like. I've seen the video. And that's what the Bulls were just, they weren't a basketball team. They were a traveling rock band. And I don't think they could have probably done the things that they did if there was, you know, videos being posted to social media. But I mean, they were covered. Don't get me wrong. I mean, geez, there were how many writers, Jason, that were covered to you know, chronicle that team, TV stations, sports radio stations 24/7. They were the main story. But I think the difference is back then, my understanding is they respected their personal lives a little more. So yes, everyone knows that MJ, you know, went to Atlantic City, the famous, you know, gambling trip. But no one really knows all of the details. You know, yes, Michael was caught, much to his dismay, you know, golfing with a friend that had some legal issues. But that never really exploded in the news cycle the way it would have today. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because people have to be covered. And I think, you know, people are, you know, if you're a celebrity, you're in the public eye, it's the good, the bad, and everything in between. But I think because they sort of backed off their private lives some back then, they were able to coexist and still be in the spotlight, and much more successful doing so than if this was happening in 2020.
The other part of it, though, Jeff, is that we've seen, you know, some of this bad blood reboiling, let's say it that way, Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons and the Bulls, and it's sort of brought all of this negativity back to the surface. Could you argue that maybe the documentary has been hurtful for players in that era in that sense?
I think it's only hurtful if you allow it to hurt you. And, you know, I had a chance many years ago to do a radio show with Isaiah Thomas, and he's a very charming guy. I really liked him a lot. I think, I don't think he needs to worry about what the public is saying about him right now. Like doing interviews and defending yourself, you know, the walk off, the handshake, the non handshake. I don't think you're doing yourself a service there. So what I would say is, if you're Isaiah, if you're Craig Elo, who took, Jason, an unexpected shot from Ron Harper talking about the defensive rotations in that playoff
was
series.
Brutal. I mean,
in 89. My goodness, poor Craig Elo had no idea that was coming, I'm sure. I would just say, listen, this is history. Don't worry about it. And with Michael Jordan, he wasn't friends with everybody. I think that's very clear. I mean, he held people to an incredibly high standard. I think he also held himself to the same standard, so that's okay. But yeah, it's maybe not going to make people look great, but I think if you can't change history. So what happened happened. I would say look back on it, you know, embrace it for what it is. It's the truth. And I think things that have come out so far in the first four episodes, Jason, I don't think there's much room for debate. The only thing is, of course, if Jerry Krause were still alive, he would have his say on what happened. But I kind of had a feeling when word came out that, you know, MJ was the driving force behind this, that the portrait of Jerry Krause was not going to be very flattering, because a lot of those guys, as people have seen early on in the docuseries, just didn't like him.
We're talking to ESPN's Jeff Dickerson. He'll be hosting Game Day on ESPN Radio tomorrow, 1 to 6 p.m. Eastern. But with that being said, with Krause, how is it that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner that actually writes these checks, is walking out of all of this scot-free so far?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know if it's scot-free, because Jerry Reinsdorf has his own issues. I mean, the sad thing is, Jason, look, I mean, the last championship was 98, the last dance. The Bulls have never been back to the finals since then. They've been to the conference finals once, and that was the Derrick Rose year before he got injured. So it's not as if Jerry Reinsdorf has escaped scrutiny, certainly in this town. Now, the White Sox won the World Series in 2005. but that's it. So since 98, he's owned two teams consecutively. Every year he's had two chances to win a championship, and he's delivered one championship since 1998. So believe me, in Chicago, I think he is recognized for owning the team that won six championships in the Bulls, but it certainly hasn't been a very flattering, and the Bulls, as of late, have been a mess. Now they've made some front office changes, and hopefully that's for the better. But yeah, I think Krause was an easier target, Jason, because he was probably more accessible. It's always easier to go after middle management than the top dog. And I think he was, you know, because he maybe, was a little, out of shape, if you will, maybe a little more socially awkward around the guys. I think they found him to be a much easier person to go after than Reinsdorf. But hey, how MJ and those guys feel about Reinsdorf, I think is a very valid question. And maybe that'll get explored more as the docuseries goes on.
We're talking to Jeff Dickerson on First Take Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz on ESPN Radio. Okay. I'm asking everybody today who's most like MJ in all the sports right now, but I want to ask you sort of a different spin off of that, Jeff, because I said earlier that part of what made Michael Jordan incredible when he was playing was not just what he demanded from himself and not just what he demanded from his teammates, but the fact that he got great players around him to understand that they needed to modify their roles in order to play with him and be their best. What was it about Michael Jordan that made great players take smaller roles in order to be successful?
Because I think they understood that this was a once-in-a-lifetime great player that they had a chance to play with. And it was about winning championships back then, just as it's about winning championships right now. That has not changed one bit. So it's easier for a Dennis Rodman not to be the biggest superstar, for Scottie Pippen to be the wingman, the sort of the sidekick, for Horace Grant, who was a fabulous player in those first three championships, to be your third option. For Tony Kukoc, who we haven't even heard about yet in The Last Dance, who was an incredible player for the Bulls in that role as the sixth man. He was a starter when Michael was playing baseball. For him to be that way, for Steve Kerr to be a role player, for all these great, you know, players to accept the responsibilities they were given is because they knew that no matter what, at the end of the day, more times than not, Michael Jordan was going to help them win games. And to win games, you sacrifice everything. And by the way, I had my guy in mind for you. I was listening earlier. I know he's a young player, but Jason, when I watch Patrick Mahomes, and it's that will to win, where he goes, we're going to do this. We're going to come back and we're going to win these playoff games. We're going to win a Super Bowl. And he basically wills them to a victory. That, my friend, is the comparison that I can draw between Michael Jordan, because that's what MJ had. You always knew you had a chance to win if Michael Jordan was on your team.
Oh, you can follow him on Twitter, at Dickerson ESPN. Jeff, you're right, and that hurts my heart as a Raiders fan because it's going to be a long 15 years. Okay, follow him on Twitter, at Dickerson ESPN. Listening to him tomorrow on ESPN Radio hosting Game Day, 1 to 6 p.m. Eastern. As always, JD, appreciate your time, man. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, man. Have a great weekend.
Don't forget, tune into The Last Dance. It's the behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. And also, don't forget, when it comes to insurance, State Farm's the real deal. With over 19,000 local agents and an award-winning mobile app, you can get the help you need when you need it. Find an agent or get a quote at statefarm.com. I want more of your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who's most like Michael Jordan in all of sports right now? We're going to take more of your take next. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. If you missed the second hour of today's show, fear not. You can go check it out. It's on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. All right, so I've been asking you for your take. So many of you guys want to chime in. We're going to let you take over the rest of the show. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun. I want your take. Who's most like Michael Jordan in all of sports right now? Who's the most MJ in all of sports right now? Mike in Pennsylvania, who you got is the most MJ-like in all of sports?
Hey, Fitz, thanks for taking my call. I'm in agreement with you. I know there's a lot of individual sports athletes that have performed and have outperformed, but I cannot equate them to what Michael Jordan did as his ability to carry a team completely on his back. The only other ones that I can – the first person I thought of that could do both offense and defensively carry a team is Derek Jeter. As much as I despise the Yankees, the Mets, all things New York competitively, I got to respect the player, and that's Derek Jeter.
I don't mind Jeter as a call on that. I mean, you know, Jeter obviously was a leader to some level. I don't know. Do we think of Jeter in the same breath as we think of, like, athletically or competitively as we think of – Jordan, it feels like that's a stretch, but there's got to be somebody from the Major League Baseball world that gets into that conversation. So, Joseph in Virginia Beach, who do you got as the most MJ-like in all of sports right now?
How you doing, Fitz? Pleasure to take the call for me. I'm going to make this a comparison to Tiger Woods in golf because this is the most relatable sport. But Jason Belmonte in PBA, as far as professional bowling, 13 major championships. By the time he's 36, the next closest he was Pete Weber and Dick Weber at 10, and they're both on the senior tour or retired. So he's won 3 more major championships and almost 10 years shorter distance. So I feel like that's, to me, probably even better than Jordan in his respect to sport, but can't compare an individual sport to a team sport.
Well, winning, I'll give you, I wouldn't know anything about him. I'll be frank about that. Winning, I'll give you, but the rest of it, I mean, is there that same, I don't know, do pro bowlers have that same, like, competitive fire? Oh, boy, my Twitter's just going to light up from even asking this question. Understand, like, I'm a little lost on that one. I love the take, but I'm a little lost on that one. Robert in Vegas. Robert, what do you got as the most MJ in all the sports?
Well, first I was going to say Tom Brady, but then he quit on his coach, and we knew MJ never did that. And come on, Patrick Mahomes, one championship, that's cute. But how are you going to compare that to a GOAT who's proven it 6 times? And, like, come on, man. Remember when Aaron Rodgers was supposedly going to be the GOAT? The answer is simple. Floyd Money Mayweather, 20 years without a loss, 16 straight world champions defeated, took a 2-year retirement, comes back, begins his second title reign. And then, not only that, he's supposedly this really, a really dislikable personality, becomes boxing's first billionaire, holds all the records for the highest pay-per-views, takes an exhibition match against an MMA fighter, and turns that into a $500 million extravaganza, and made all his competition, except a couple guys, look not on his level. And then he came back and repeated the victories over those guys.
But you're ignoring, and look, I get all the dominance conversation. Thanks for your take on it. But you're ignoring one of the most important parts of Michael Jordan. He did all of it while being lovable. People love Mike. Like Mike, if I could be like Mike, nobody's saying that about Floyd. Nobody is saying that about Mayweather anywhere. I love it. That's what makes this debate interesting. But, you know, Mike wasn't just Michael Jordan. Wasn't just what Mike, like I know him, wasn't just what he did on the court. It's what he did off the court. It's what he did as a brand. It's what he did as a leader. It's how he did it on the floor. It's how he did it as a competitor. That's what makes it great. Is there any player you'd take before Giannis to be the centerpiece of your NBA franchise? Will Cain breaks it down for you next. Thanks for listening to First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio.